Today's episode of the Film Stage Roundtable is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run a risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Roundtable, the spin-off podcast of the Film Stage Show. As always, I am your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today we have Michael Snydell.
Good evening.
We also have Bill Graham. Fantastic. So yes, today we are here not to review a film, but to talk about random topics related to film culture as a whole. Of course, you can always get in touch with us and offer up your ideas for things that we should talk about by reaching out on Twitter at Filmstage Show or email podcast@filmstage.com or by finding us on Facebook, searching for the Filmstage Show. We did, in fact, have a person who offered up an idea just this morning after we'd already locked in our topics. It is something that we may have to revisit another time because I actually do have a funny and, as I said on Twitter, very on-brand story that involves this topic. The suggested topic was movies that after a breakup you have a hard time revisiting because they are so connected to your partner. And there's like a perfect Brian doesn't know when he's being funny or an asshole story that goes along with that. So we might have to check that out one day, but not today. I do want to tell everyone listening at home that the second topic that we talk about today is going to involve spoilers for Logan. So if you haven't seen that movie yet, don't listen to that one. But the first topic is, in fact, safe for all ears.
Like, we literally can't even tell you the topic.
Yeah, I can't. I actually got to figure out what to do about that in terms of labeling all these. But that's a concern for another time. So that's that. Before we get into our topics, let me remind everyone that we are brought to you by Mubi. Mubi is the streaming online cinema where every day they introduce a new independent, foreign, or all-around wonderful film for your viewing enjoyment. During that 30 days that you have that film for, you are able to watch it on your streaming devices, on your smart TV, or you can even download it to whatever personal device you may have so that should you lose the internet, God forbid, you will still be able to watch the movie that you got off of Mubi. Mubi has curators, so you know your movies are being selected by people with a passion for film that is almost as equal to ours, and you know that you're getting something truly wonderful. So if you would like a free 30-day trial to see the wonder of Mubi for yourself, go to mubi.com and then /filmstage. And because we love you and we love Mubi and want you to love each other, we are going to give you a 30-day free trial. So check it out. That is Mubi, M-U-B-I, new year, still no tagline. So guys, it's been 3 to 4 days since last we spoke. We're not recording on a Thursday, so hopefully everything goes smoothly.
Are and this we is ready? The first time we've recorded on a Wednesday in a while. Isn't it?
We finally made it work. So, you know, God willing, we shouldn't be as punchy as we usually are during these things. Our first topic today, also inspired by Logan, but in a non-spoilery way. This is going to be a topic related to the resurgence, or not the, well, I guess it's a resurgence since we used to have some. The sudden spat and success of R-rated superhero films. Is it good? Is it bad? And is it a trend that more films should follow?
Wouldn't it be nice to live together in the kind of world where
heard someone laughing, so obviously the meaning behind my song choice is not entirely lost. It's true. Superhero films, once the realm of the 13-plus set, have met a sudden swell of superhero films that are strictly restricted rated, so that you have to be 17-plus or accompanied by a parent or adult to be able to watch them. This includes Deadpool, which was last year's surprise success, and Logan, which was this year's surprise, but maybe not as surprising success. And we, having viewed this and having bemoaned for a while now the way that superhero films have found themselves in a rut, wanted to talk about what this means for the future of superhero films. Is this something that studios should be pursuing for everyone? Is this a fun little treat every now and then? Or is it something that will one day become very, very annoying and very samey? So let's start off with Bill Graham. Bill Graham, what do you think of this new trend of more mature superhero films?
So I think we have to kind of kick it off with a discussion about Blade and the trilogy of films surrounding that. The original Blade came out in 1998. So just before The Matrix was a huge commercial hit, Blade came out, and it cost about $40 million, and it apparently made about $131 million worldwide. Now, 1998 was a different time. The worldwide grosses weren't as hot and heavy as they are now. Back then, America was still kind of a prime target for most Hollywood cinema. The overseas market hadn't been saturated as much as it is now. And so, you know, if you could make about double your, or, you know, a little bit more than double your money here in America, in the U.S. box office, you were pretty golden. That was pretty much going to set you up for another sequel and things like that. Nowadays, we're looking at like a 1-to-3 ratio as far as what America brings in and what the overseas markets bring in. You know, we were talking about $600 million overseas and maybe $150 to $200 million in America. So we are not the powerhouse that we were. We do not float films quite as much as we used to. And I'm not sure what that means for rated R grosses, because rated R grosses are a little bit different. I guess the easiest way to look at it is to look at a film like last year's Deadpool, which I believe was one of the highest grossing films period, but also one of the highest grossing films in the superhero market. And let me see here real quick. But that film was made for about – give me 1 second. I think it was made for about – oh, of course, Box Office Mojo is having a fucking fit.
This is compelling radio, Bill.
Yes, I'm sorry. It was made for $58 million.
I'm trying to bring up the same thing for you, and I'm having the same problem.
And it
According to Box Office Mojo, we're in the process of updating the site right now. Try again in just a few minutes.
Yeah, so production issues, not on our end.
I made $760 million, I know that, for just for U.S. dollars, so I believe that's the global gross.
Quite impressive for an R-rated movie about a comic book hero that like a lot of people don't know that much about.
Exactly. Sure. That was definitely a huge thing.
Now, Bill, to
so here it is. Here it is as well.
Budget is $58 million.
So it made $363 million in the United States and Canada. Correct. And $420 million in other countries. So what I'm seeing here is a nearly even amount of, I mean, not even, right? Not literally even, but it's pretty close to a 1-to-1 ratio of U.S. versus overseas market. So I think the fact that it made $363 million here in the US and Canada speaks volumes about kind of the marketplace here and the fact that we just haven't. So Deadpool, Brian, did you ever see Deadpool? I know Michael's very strong opponent of it, but
nope,
I know he
didn't
hates
see
it. Okay. For people that haven't seen Deadpool, which would be surprising since it made $363 million here in the U.S., which a lot of films do not do anymore. It's rare for very many films, summer blockbusters. This came out in February of last year, so it wasn't even summer. For films like this to even make $300 million domestic. And so this one made over $300 million domestic and happened to be rated R and based on a small property. And the lead actor's face is all fucked up throughout most of the movie. So you don't even have that going for you. Yeah, this movie is a weird, weird movie. But it was for a lot of audiences, I think it was kind of a delight to have a film that was rated R and goofy and silly and fun and was immature and also kind of a send up of all the action tropes and all of the Marvel kind of machinations that we see in so many of the superhero films. The story is very bare bones and very dumb, and yet it still made a lot of money and it still got pretty good reviews overall. So I think when we talk about films like this, it's hard to understand how a film like the Blade trilogy, it went up in price and continued to make about the exact same box office. So the first one was made for $40 million and it made $131 million. Second one was $54 million, made $155 million, and the third one was $65 million and it made $128 million. So, you know, mixed results right there. But that movie was made for $65 million back in 2004. All right, why don't we see more of these films in that price range under the $70 or $80 million mark? And I think Blumhouse is a perfect example of people making money or making movies for a price that most audiences can kind of wrap their head around. Most of their budgets are about $5 million to $6 to $7, somewhere in that range. And the last Insidious, or not the last one, but the Insidious Chapter 2, it was with a budget of $5 million and it made $161 million worldwide. These studios have the ability to churn out. They have so many titles under their banner. Why they are not just constantly churning out superhero films for $5 to $10 million and just taking a gamble on it, making it rated R, making it whatever it wants to be. Why don't we see three Spawn movies out right now? Why don't we see
Do you really think you could make like a Spawn movie for $5 million? I mean,
I think
the 1997 one was $40 million for its budget.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the problems with this concept is that you can make an Insidious movie because half of it is just, okay, we're going to shoot down this hallway and then we're going to have an apparition just walk through. And the rest of it's going to be people hanging around a house, not leaving that stupid house. I haven't seen the Insidious movies.
Brian, even for a more low concept superhero, something like The Crow, for instance, was still $15 million, right? And that made only $50 million. And, you know, that's like, you know, it doesn't require the same, you know, level of special effects and things like that. But that was a success in that moment. But like, this is, you know, things like Deadpool and Logan. It's like a whole nother ballgame.
I mean, the first John Wick, which is, you know, it's got some special effects, but really it's just squibs and blanks, was $20 million. I mean,
And that's what I'm saying. Why
really well?
Why are these films not coming out? And look, I said Blumhouse because Blumhouse could probably take some of these concepts, these comic book concepts that don't have high production value costs kind of ingrained in them. Yes, Spawn was a terrible example because that character is all CGI.
The most CGI-reliant guy.
Yeah, I mean, next to Green Lantern, I can't think of another superhero that is like all tied into CGI, like his cape and everything.
Spin-off movie.
Yeah, but that yeah.
The Punisher
said,
might be a better one.
The Punisher.
Because the Punisher
and
is just
John
Wick without
films.
Style.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it's all of these things, and you're just like, I don't understand why it's taken this long for some of these major studios that haven't had that much success with their Marvel properties. I mean, for Fox, the Fantastic Four series has been a fucking dud. It's been terrible. They've had three movies that have just progressively gotten worse. How does that happen? How does that happen with your major franchise that you bought from Marvel? I don't know. And, you know, now all of a sudden they've had two hits in a row where their PG-13 film sandwiched in between it, X-Men Apocalypse, was terrible. And it bombed at the box office. And you're like, okay, so their rated R movies are actually making money, but their standard normal properties are trash. So I think some of these companies have to just kind of realize that maybe swinging for the fences every single time with their film isn't going to end up with the kind of film that someone wants to watch. That's ultimately what it's kind of come down to, is we can have all of these rated R films and things like that, but if you start blossoming out the budget – studios are going to start to clamp down and limit creative control. And ultimately, Deadpool was kind of a dream project for Ryan Reynolds and the director, and it got budgeted and it got made. And the same thing with Logan. So creative control given to some of these directors helps a lot. And it also helps to separate your film. I think that's a huge key that some of these $150 to $200 million movies just do not have the luxury to kind of be different. They have to be a global marketplace leader in terms of box office, which means their plots and their stories and even some of their characters, they have to be able to be translated well and sold overseas. And that's the unfortunate reality of the global box office.
Guys, I do have to say, though, I mean, Deadpool had a narrative of an underdog, but this is also Ryan Reynolds, a giant movie star, was okay, a big person who kicked
Michael,
in money into
he,
this. It's not like it's
not
like
a
it's
box
a big
office
risk.
Draw.
Not at all. Nope.
He is the opposite of a box office draw.
No,
I mean,
but he has money. I don't really care if he's a box office draw. I'm saying if you have a star saying, I'm putting in this much money and I'm trying to find the exact story, but I want to say that he paid for a significant amount of the budget from what I'm remembering. I'm trying to look
for him, but like that's what I mean, like that's being a producer basically. Like that was his prerogative.
I mean, I understand that, but I'm just saying like this is not like this is
I think what it's not surprising that the movie got made. It's surprising that it did so well.
Mm-hmm. That was the biggest surprise for everybody.
I think that
everybody in the watching box office numbers were just flabbergasted because it's two things at the same time. A, it is a rated R movie, and rated R movies do not make big box office grosses. It outgrossed, I believe, Batman versus Superman that year. That is insane.
It's an R-rated movie tailor-made for 14-year-olds. Like, if I was 14 or 15, I would be dying to go into that. Like, like, I would find any way possible to go to that movie. Like, I don't know. I don't at the idea that this is as much of a phenomenon as it's been kind of as the mold it's been pushed into.
I think, Michael, a rated R movie making $700 to $800 million worldwide. I mean, that's not really heard of that often. Like, you have to grant that, right?
What was the Matrix gross?
Well,
the Matrix rated R.
Yes, it was. Unfortunately,
yes.
It's silly that it's rated R. But look, here's a direct correlation.
You've been talking for like 20 minutes. I would like to engage with Michael for a second, because what the problem is
talk about Kick-Ass.
No, I refuse. Because we haven't even broached the topic that we're supposed to be talking about. Like, we sort of have when Bill brought up trying to make a $5 million Spawn movie. But this is one of these things where I think that studios are going to start taking the wrong messages from these victories that these movies have gotten. I mean, Deadpool did great money, regardless of whether it's an underdog story or not. Logan seems to be doing the same.
Did you guys see the rap story from yesterday?
No.
Umberto Gonzalez's exclusive?
No.
Anyways, he talked to a person inside DC Studios, and they said they're 100% willing to do an R-rated superhero movie. But it's just with the right character. And then the other thing that is in tandem with that, which is a very small sample size, but Fandango did a small poll on its own asking viewers whether they are interested in whether they want more R-rated superhero blockbusters, and 71% said yes.
But this is bullshit, because what they should be asking is, would you like more superhero movies that are as good as Logan or as good as Deadpool? Because the ratings didn't make those movies. We have to. This is the only reason why I wanted to talk about this. A movie should get its rating based on what it is. It shouldn't try to make itself something to fit its rating. So, like I said during our Logan podcast, it's absurd that Logan was ever in a PG-13 movie. He is a biological set of knives. Like, it's absurd that they made that a PG-13 character. And if you're doing a Batman movie, I think, you know, anyone who says they want a rated R Batman is just insane, because you don't need an R rating to make Batman interesting. Christopher Nolan did it PG-13 three times, and he had shocking violence in his movies because he's a storyteller who knows how to operate on that level. I mean, the pencil scene, the scene where it's intimated that he made three men fight to the death with a broken pool cue. These are the things that happen in these movies, and it's not the violence, it's the story around them and what these artists can do. So I don't think we need to reduce budgets just to be able to have R-rated superhero films. I think that what we're really looking at here is we need to reduce budgets just so that people can tell a risky story. And I don't care if you make a Green Lantern movie that's rated G, if you give someone the ability to tell a story that is germane to that character and has something interesting to say and has a fucking ending, then I think that that's what we should be pushing for. Screw the ratings. Screw the ratings. Not every goddamn superhero needs to be rated R. Superman doesn't need to be rated R. Yep. Like,
yeah, and that's what I mentioned. That's what I mentioned.
He is the most unrated R because he's invulnerable.
You limit the budgets, and then you give back creative control to some of these film directors, and you quit making movies by committee. You know, $150 million, I understand someone above has to be steering that ship, because that's a shit ton of money. But $30, $40, $50 million, you can take a gamble.
Yeah, but I mean, what I keep saying is, you know, Hollywood will look at anything and take the wrong lesson from it. And what they're going to do here is what we already saw DC kind of doing, where they're like, oh, we have an unrated cut of Batman versus Superman. We have an unrated cut of Suicide Squad. It's like,
this is why I brought up the story. I mean, this is.
Yeah.
I just want to say I'm agreeing with you. I'm not trying to.
I believe it, because the second you said
combat
DC,
what you're saying at all. Okay.
The second you said DC is willing to make an R-rated film, I'm like, of course they are. But are they willing to make a good film?
Yep.
Which they're not, really.
And they're like, not.
It's insanity, because they just keep trying to do this thing where they're like, okay, well, we're going to make it gritty to get away from Marvel's candy-coloredness, which is fine in theory, but your superheroes are the happiest on Earth. Like, you have Superman. Superman is a beacon of light. He is a moral authority. He is the shining alien on the hill who we're supposed to strive for. If anyone could make a compelling, like, PG-rated movie, it would be Superman. You just get Brad Bird and the people who wrote The Incredibles, and you get them to do it. And yeah. It's just
Lois
it's
calls
insane.
Him Smallville. Like, come on. Like, this is sappy middle America movie, and it's about a guy that's trying to fit into the world, and his reach for the stars moment is to be a fucking reporter. Are you kidding me? Like, this is insanity. This is so it's such a dopey story that needs to be like PG. Like, it's such a PG movie.
You could make a Superman film that was just him being a reporter, and that would be like just subversive as hell. Just if he was using all of his Superman things to like break a story because he realized that he couldn't punch his way out of this one. I mean, it's all about tailoring a film to a character, which is why, like, Batman versus Superman, it just doesn't make sense with the way that these characters are supposed to be. You can have Deadpool be R-rated. I mean, the Punisher has been R-rated, I think, twice before. At least Punisher Warzone was rated R.
Oh, both of those were definitely rated R.
Even the Tom Jane version?
Oh, yes. Okay. Oh, yes.
I don't remember that one that well. But, I mean...
Whose memory is shoddy now?
I'm sorry that I don't remember what Tom Jane's Punisher movie was rated.
It was on in the bar I was in the other night, so that's... I can definitely say it is definitely rated R.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, I do recall that being pretty violent. But anyway, what I was saying is, you don't, for the love of God, like, just don't start making Spider-Man rated R. Like, don't start making Superman rated R. That's not what these people are for. Like, Deadpool is for the absurd violence. He's a shitty Quentin Tarantino character, but that strikes a chord with people. Logan is a wounded, living weapon. Like, that's what he's for. But Spider-Man is not. Superman is not. And we have to do something to butt back against people just taking the complete and utter wrong lesson out of these things. And so when people say, like, we should have more R-rated superhero films, like, my response is just no. We need more
good
thoughtful
stories,
interestingly made stories that happen to involve superheroes.
Yeah.
So that's my rant. Would anyone like to follow that up, or are we good?
Oh, can I talk? Okay, all right.
Well, Bill, I mean, you went on for 15 minutes about Blade and
I had to set the scene.
I don't believe so, but yeah, go ahead. What'd you got to add on here?
Oh, nothing right now.
Oh, okay, good. But 300, you are allowed to talk when you're ready.
Okay. 300 was made for $65 million, and it made $456 million worldwide. So there's another film that you know, for better or worse, it is a comic book movie, and it was definitely a fucking movie that was all Zack Snyder controlled. I mean, you can look at the beginning, just from top down of that film, the action set pieces, the way it takes panels literally from the comic book, for mm-hmm. better or worse, the way it's shot. I mean, back then, I think Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow had done some of this kind of stuff, but we hadn't really seen. This was before Avatar. This was before a lot of these other films where everything around you was literally CGI. Like, you know, whole sets were just, oh yeah, they're walking, and they're walking in the middle of a green screen, like, warehouse, and that's all they're doing. And that's all that movie was. And so it was literally comic book pages ripped and put up on the screen. And it was very unique and very interesting the way it, you know. So that is a film from top to bottom that was creative controlled. And, you know, Frank Miller was involved in that. And there we go. You know, whether you like the film or not, it's hard to argue that Zack Snyder made a film that he made, that he wanted to make, and that he didn't have very much to push back or fight against.
I guess the question I still have with this, and I don't really know the answer, I guess I just kind of want to spark a discussion, is, you know, why are some of these other examples from the last 10 years, for instance, things like, yes, Kick-Ass, or, you know, Constantine, or Dread, you know, why was Deadpool the one that sparked? I mean, I guess Kick-Ass especially is the closest relative to Deadpool in terms of Kick-Ass sensibility.
Its sensibilities are very aligned. I think part of it is just the Marvel machine. It is so hard to parse out why Deadpool actually worked. But to be honest with you, the trailers, every single time I saw it in a theater, people were having a ball throughout the entire trailer. And the trailer was actually what ended up being the movie. It was, for 90 minutes, just joke after joke after joke after joke. So if you were into that sense of humor, right?
Sure.
And you were game for it, that film was everything that you wanted out of that trailer for it to be, right? And so I think that was one of the key aspects, was the trailers were hilarious and the film was hilarious, and therefore money in the bank, I guess. I know multiple people that saw it multiple times. So it's one of those things where I think it just caught wind at a good time, and it preyed on a time period when Hollywood typically dumps shit movies. It was in February. It played counter to, if I'm not mistaken, it played directly counter to the last 50 Shades of Grey movie, didn't it?
You might be right. I'm going to look it up right now.
I don't know. But to your question, Michael, as to why, I mean, we've had R-rated movies based on comic books. We had Sin City.
Sure.
You know, all these things. I always love bringing up Road to Perdition.
Uh-huh. Yep. It's a graphic novel, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
But I mean, it was
the ninth highest grossing film of 2016. That's insanity. It's a rated R movie based on a comic book property that hardly anybody knew. With a guy, Deadpool, with a guy in a mask, almost the entire film. It's just like, okay, yeah, that's Ryan Reynolds under that mask, but you can't fucking tell. Like, it's hard to sell that movie.
His voice is more important than his face in most cases.
You might get an argument from the female demographic, but
again, I think that we as a culture overvalue Ryan Reynolds.
I know a few people who wanted to see Deadpool only because of Ryan Reynolds.
Well, Chicago's weird. What I was going to say is, he, like, you know, 300, Sin City, Road to Perdition, these are not superhero films. That's why I didn't really say comic books. I said superheroes.
Sure, sure.
Like, when we see a superhero, we assume...
I'm just trying to cast a wide net.
Yes. But I mean, you know, fucking Ghost World is a comic movie. Like, you know, and yes, graphic novel, whatever. It's the same basic medium. It's the difference between calling something a movie and a film, in my estimation. I mean, that's just what it is. And so that's what I'm concerned about, because we've been doing creative and interesting R-rated adaptations of graphic novels and comics for a while. But now we are willing to go to wells and think about making things R-rated that we would not have in the past. And I am deeply concerned, especially anywhere that DC is looking.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing is that Fox has actually found a formula where they give creative control to the filmmakers. Please, God, quit giving Bryan Singer a blank check. And, you know, actually succeeding for a change. And this was a studio for a while that you could mark up. Look, they kind of kicked off the new age of superhero films and this kind of whole fandom with the first X-Men. It came out before Spider-Man, and you know, Batman at the time was in shambles. I think it was just coming off of the one with Arnold Schwarzenegger, which was a fucking disaster. So, you know, they were kind of in the corner whimpering, and nobody knew what the hell to do anymore. And then they came out with X-Men. And then shortly after that, Spider-Man came out. And shortly after that, we had the Superman reboot, which was awful. And all of these other things that have kind of spiraled out from it. But they had a string where X-Men Origins Wolverine came out. They made what else? They made First Class, which was, for my eyes, another film that was kind of given creative control to Matthew Vaughn, and he knocked it out of the park.
And then Bryan Singer swooped in and destroyed all of it.
And that's the thing.
We should just one day have an entire thing where we just talk about how terrible it was that after Matthew Vaughn struggled to bring the X-Men back to an interesting place creatively, Bryan fucking Singer just walked in and was like, "What's up, bitches? I'm back. I'm going to make this shit again."
Guys, yeah. I think people actually really like – I really dislike Days of Future Past, but I think we might be in the minority if we're all
weird to me.
Because I remember watching the movie in theaters at a preview screening and just looking around and being like, this movie is terrible. And and seeing a lot of people really enjoying it and feeling like the odd man out. I think it has like a 95% Rotten Tomatoes rating. So it is like kind of universally loved by a lot of critics. And I still go to bat that is not a good movie. Not by any measure, not by any means.
I don't remember what I said at the time, but I feel like I really didn't like it. At least looking back on it in retrospect, it's clearly not a good film.
But I'm curious what the after Logan is the next highest gross as well, because I'm looking at Days of Future Past. That was $233 million for domestic. And I feel like this Last Stand, I thought, was kind of a flub, and that's why he lost control for a bit, wasn't it?
Last Stand wasn't even him; it was Brett Ratner.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh,
they weren't willing to wait for Bryan Singer to finish up. I think it was Superman Returns.
Yep, it was.
Oh wow. Okay.
And so they were like, "All right, we'll give it to Brett Ratner. He's good at doing shit."
and he turned in a shit movie.
Yeah. Remember when people thought First that Class guy was going to be like the next Spielberg or something?
I don't.
He was like anointed by Spielberg. Like he was like a Spielberg protege.
Yeah, well,
and
whatever.
People were like, "Oh, Brett Ratner," and then he just started sucking.
First Class is $146 million, and X-Men 2 is
First Class didn't make a lot of money, unfortunately.
Well, because it
was
coming off of the burn.
X-Men 2 was 214.
It was coming off the burn of whatchamacallit, The Last Stand. Anyway, I have nothing else to say on this topic.
Do we have any idea of a mature comic book character that might be good to adapt?
No.
Okay.
I don't know enough about comics. I think maybe like the Sandman. You know, could
I still
want
to see a sex criminals movie.
I think Sandman is probably gonna. I think Sandman's probably gonna be a television show more than anything. I can see that on HBO or Netflix.
Yeah. What were you? What did you say, Michael?
Sex criminals. It's a Matt Fraction comic.
Please expand upon what that is.
Sure, sure. It's a comic book about how much do I want to give? Okay, fine. It's about two people who learn that they have the ability to freeze time when they orgasm. And that's okay. All I need to say. It's a superhero comic. It's great.
That sounds hilarious.
I would highly recommend it.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And it's definitely called Sex Criminals, and it is weird to read on the bus, let me tell you.
yeah, I believe so. It's like when I read Porno by Irving Welsh.
Nice.
That was difficult.
All of those books should come with a slip cover for public reading.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably a good point. Yeah.
Very true. All right, well, let's move on. As I said, this next topic is going to be filled with spoilers. And so don't listen if you haven't seen Logan. This will also be a very brief topic because we just don't have that much time left. And I can't, for the life of me, imagine this one taking too long, which is why we chose to pair it with talking about superhero comic movie financial information. All right. So everyone, if you haven't seen Logan, turn off your thing right now. You know, it sucks, because you know how, like, when we were doing the Logan podcast, I said spoilers and then paused and then just launched into the biggest one? My wife was at
the time... I honestly don't think that's a big spoiler, to be honest with you.
It's the end of the movie. It's the very end of the movie. And my wife at the time had been cutting peppers and didn't want to touch her phone with her fingers covered in pepper juice so she'd burn herself later. So she tried as fast as she could to wash her hands off when I first started talking about spoilers, but she just didn't make it in time. She texted me. She was very upset. And then I told her, I was like, you know, it's not, that's like the least of the spoilers, like Bill said. But anyway, yeah. We've given people enough time to shut off their phones now. So Logan dies at the end of Logan. The Wolverine is dead. So we wanted to just come
and
in here.
And doesn't come back in a post-credit sequence.
His hand doesn't shoot up. His fucking rocks don't start moving. You know, his cross and X doesn't light on fire. He's just dead. He's just fucking dead. And we hope that he stays that way. Not because we don't like him, but because it was a good send-off. So now, we want to give our opinions of what is another hero in the cinematic sphere who ought to have a Logan-esque final chapter. Something where they give him a proper send-off, him or her a proper send-off, and then murder him or her so that they can never come back. And, I still don't have a trendy thing to call this particular topic because I don't want to spoil it for people, so...
Why won't you just die?
Just, no, because, again... I don't want to spoil it for people who are looking at it.
But that's a great like quote from Austin Powers, which is one of my favorite film series.
Bill, no.
Judgment comes for you. What you gonna do when it ain't nowhere to hide? When judgment comes for you, 'cause it's gonna come for you.
That is Bone Thugs and Harmony. Meet you at the curses. You at the crossroads. And I think that's perfect for this because we're going to talk about some people who we don't want to see in films anymore. We will instead see them at the crossroads. So. Let's kick this off. Since Bill started us off last time, Michael Snydell, who is a cinematic hero or, you know, let's not even say hero, who's just a cinematic presence that you would like to see have murdered for good at the end of a movie, which presumably the movie itself would be a fitting send-off before they're killed.
Well, the one I'm picking isn't really that exciting or interesting, but I picked it because as I started thinking more about it, it just reminded me that Logan actually committed, and that is James Bond. And so for the last couple installments, I guess you could say the entire Daniel Craig run at the very least, and maybe going further back if you want to talk about some deep cuts. Bond has had this atmosphere of dread and death, and it's only been kind of enhanced and sharpened, especially in Spectre and Skyfall. There's just this sense of fatalism and a sense that he just wants to die and be done with this. And he's just waiting for, you know, that villain that will finally kill him, like something that will finally best him. So what I would really like to see is a little bit cheating, but I want a passing of the torch that comes with Bond's death. You know, whether it goes to, you know, whoever his predecessor is, not the word I'm looking for here, is it? No, whoever.
Successor.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bill. Whoever his successor is, for instance, Idris Elba, or, you know, someone younger, since they seem to be wanting it to go into that direction with, you know, each passing year. I want to see Bond die, because I think that would be an encapsulation of all of the themes that they want, of all, it'll be a conclusion of everything they want to say about, you know, Blofeld, about the issues he has with his family, and just the sense that he can never, ever be happy. Like, I guess it's, as I talk more about it, it sounds a lot like Logan, but I think it's time that Bond finally gets laid to rest and someone with an entirely different backstory takes his place.
I'm with you up until the point that you say, and then they should pass the torch. I just, because I think that that's where a lot of these things get in trouble.
Sure.
This can lead into mine. Because... Wait,
okay, let me say one thing then. If they pass the torch, I want a new... I don't want Sam Mendes involved anymore. I don't want Martin Campbell. I want someone who is deeply off the path. Someone who can bring an entirely different tone.
Woody
and
Allen.
Sensibility.
So my choice,
Jonathan Glazer is James Bond.
My choice is, and what I was gonna say, I don't like the concept of passing a torch. I think that there's something very dumb about that in movies that have tried it, and my guy who should die at the end of a good movie to just set it all off, just put it down and walk away, is Indiana Jones. And they, in the last movie, set up Shia goddamn LaBeouf as his, like, illegitimate son who is gonna, like, take up the mantle. And then they cheekily did that thing where, like, Indiana takes his hat back and is like, that's mine, or whatever that hell he says at the end of that movie. And you could just, like, feel the anger and the upset in the audience. Especially because... it's the opposite of what you'd want from an Indiana Jones movie, because it ends with him getting married, and then to Marion, who I, you know, she was fine in the first film, but I don't know that she continues to serve a purpose after it in his life in any way. I mean, the way that he should die is like in the 70s, the sexual revolution has come and gone. Feminism is on the rise. You know, he's an old lecherous teacher, and he's lost his sense of wonder, perhaps. Like, maybe as time has moved on and science has advanced, he just doesn't, even though he has seen miracles from both a Christian and I think a Hindu god, he's still just is disaffected and disillusioned and feels like magic has left the world. And he gets one last thing where he goes out and he does something, and then perhaps he gets to, like, die in a tomb. You know? And then he's just there, and he's there for some other person to discover later on. Because I think there's even a line in one of his films where it's like, you know, it belongs in a museum, and so do you. And I just think that that's a good idea. Like, you know, he's a man who had his time, and now he's just gone. And we don't need him to... you know, have a spunky female sidekick who lectures about feminist theory, or, you know, a young minority friend who's, like, not short round, but is instead an empowering symbol who tells him about civil rights and, you know, all that other it's just like, you don't need that. You just need him to die. You need him to die doing what he's supposed to do and just have it end there. And I know they're making another film now, which I hate that concept and I'm super upset about it. And if he does it, it's just, you know, I need him to have a Logan-esque, you know, final thing where he just dies and Shia LaBeouf can die off screen.
What I think is funny about him right now is his three most iconic roles, arguably, are Han Solo, Indiana Jones, and Deckard Deckard from Blade Runner. And so far, in the next few years, he's going to reprise all three of those roles.
Mm.
The dude needs to stop making movies. Although I am looking forward to Blade Runner.
He could like just make new movies. You know, he doesn't have to keep being these old things. Or, as Michael suggested, he could pick a really crazy one and be himself from Working Girl again. You know, I don't have a problem with someone revisiting a character, but I feel like that character has been abused, and I don't even feel like he wants to play him. And so I think that, you know, like with Han Solo telling him, guess what, we're going to murder him. I guess spoilers for The Force Awakens, by the way.
But seriously, fuck you if you haven't seen Force Awakens yet.
So yeah, I want Indiana Jones to die. I almost wish that it had happened at the end of Last Crusade. Bill Graham, who is your cinematic mainstay who you want to die and never come back?
I want all the current or the original Avengers cast to all meet their doom in Infinity War. There's been a lot of talk about how much they kind of occupy as far as the budget, just in terms of being in the film. And I think let's limit it to Iron Man. Let's limit it to Captain America. Let's limit it to maybe Thor. Although I think he gets a goofy amount of love out of playing that character. I think he really enjoys that. But definitely, I think Captain America and I think Robert Downey Jr. are all pretty much ready to say bon voyage to this entire film series. And, you know, I think it would be fun to have the two human characters, Captain America and Iron Man, both die in the film. I think it would actually give the film some stakes if people died and didn't come back, if they weren't rebooted and weren't given passing on the torch. Hell, I could see maybe Pepper Potts becoming a female Iron Man or some stupid shit like that they could write in. But I think the Marvel films have all been kind of trying to set up the passing of the torch with the new Ant-Man, with Black Panther, with all these new characters that they keep introducing. I think it's setting up a logical handing off, and I really wish they would just go ahead and pull that trigger and not have to have them, Captain America and Iron Man, kind of right off into the sunset doing something else, because there is no something else for those characters. They have to be Avengers or they have to die. That's pretty much the end of the line for them. They're always going to be involved anytime the world is at threat. So I would love to either have them die a brutal, gruesome death. Probably not going to be given that wish, or at the very least, given the opportunity to maybe pass on the torch and maybe in 10, 15 years reappear or something along those lines.
First of all, Bill, they have to die. That is our entire conceit, is they must die. So there can be no leaving and coming back. They're dead. They were horribly murdered. They failed. I just don't understand you guys' obsession with passing the torch. Why do you want the torch to pass?
I think I'm just I think I just know how Hollywood works.
I didn't necessarily say.
Okay.
I didn't necessarily say. Hold on.
Bill, you literally said the words "pass the torch."
Yeah, I understand, but I didn't say it in the same context of Michael, because Michael was saying literally the same character gets to pass the torch to another character coming into his steps. What I'm saying is the Avengers get to transfer the mantle of who are Avengers. So now it becomes Ant-Man, and now it becomes Black Panther. Not someone else literally becomes Captain America and Iron Man.
I thought you meant like everyone who either has or currently has a standalone movie in production dies.
No, the original cast of the Avengers. So that includes Hulk. Stark. That includes
Black Widow.
Stark. Black Widow. Although I don't necessarily need Black Widow to die, I want to see a Black Widow standalone film before she's
a
done.
Right now,
but we'll see.
I don't think she has a character.
No. Not really.
No, but they can make a movie about her.
Sure.
I just I did not expect people to say pass the torch as much as you two did.
I don't want a James Bond in the sense of a traditional James Bond at
you
all.
You want a triple
I just
X
know.
Is what you want.
Yeah, you know what? I'm fine with that.
Like an extreme sports secret agent.
I still need to see that sequel.
Dear Lord. Okay.
No, you don't.
And you know, you can say you know how Hollywood works, but you know, like that we're here to dream and to hope for a better world. So in my better world, Indiana Jones dies.
I'm a practical motherfucker.
You know what would be the best is if he dies getting bitten by a snake. I feel
that
like,
would be great.
I feel like that would be pretty solid. Yeah, so that's it. That's all for today. It's been a blast. It's time to pass the torch on to a different podcast.
Jesus fucking, come on.
I'm sorry. Maybe I should quit and pass the torch on to a new host. So
go for it.
No, I can't. No one else knows how to do the things that I do. It's funny.
that's
that's
there
rich.
Are millions of podcasts.
Yes.
Nobody
it's funny.
Knows.
I actually was a guest on a podcast, and they were shocked and amazed that I had the ability to play live audio. And once I realized that they didn't know how to do that and they couldn't stop me, I just like hijacked the podcast, constantly playing music. That is the Unnamed Movie Podcast. And it'll be out, I think, next week. So check my Twitter feed. I will post that.
That sounds because delightful.
It is me just destroying a podcast with three Jamaican men. It's amazing. I guess that serves as half of my plug. But let me plug Mubi first before we say goodbye. Mubi, the streaming online cinema, now with a Roku app that I make heavy use of. Mubi offers 30 films that rotate daily, so when a movie is introduced, you have 30 days to watch it. After that, it disappears into ether, but of course, every day, they introduce a new, brand spanking new film for you to enjoy. For your free 30-day trial of Mubi, go to mubi.com/filmstage, and that's all you gotta do. Go there, enter your information, and we will give you your free 30-day trial. So that is Mubi, mubi.com/filmstage for your free 30-day trial. Gentlemen, it's been a blast. Let us tell the fine folks at home where we can be found between now and next time. Bill Graham.
You can find me on Twitter at CableBFG, and you can also find me writing about movies on the film stage.
All right, Michael Snydell.
You could find me on Twitter at Snydell, and I also write for the film stage.
All right, fantastic. You can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. Again, I will post the link to the podcast episode that I completely derailed whenever it comes out. I don't believe they gave me a firm date, so watch that space. You can also find us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. And on Facebook, search for The Film Stage Show. Join us next time when we will be talking about Kong Skull Island. We will be recording that this weekend, and it will be out on Monday. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, tune in next time.